allows their trade unionists. On May 11, 1973, interview again took place in Sarah's home. She seemed to be a little bit tired, and in fact, in the course of the interview, interrupted it twice. At one point, she seemed to want to get away from discussion of the past and brought up a personal matter. The matter, however, was in fact from the past, but it seemed as if she needed a break from the discussion of when she was chairlady and on the joint board and executive board of Local 39. Again, after some discussion of her social life and friendships, she again wanted a break and suggested that we have tea. During tea, she continued some of the discussion we had been having and got involved in a discussion of children and the fact that at one time she had thought about having a eugenics baby. She went to speak to the cousin who was a very intimate friend who urged her against it. It would be good at another time to try and go back and get some of the information about the eugenics baby attitude on tape. It is clear, both from the way in which the interviews progress, that it's important to let Sarah continue and allow her digressions. There seems to be a chain of associations which enable her to remember certain things. It seems best to wait until this chain of associations runs out, or she in turn asks me to ask a question, to continue with the outline that we are attempting to follow. In the course of the interview, she becomes more animated, even when she starts out being tired in the beginning. When we end this, we were talking about your real awakening during the period 1918 to 1920, and when you were chairlady in 1918 at Hart, Schaffner, and Marx.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know a little bit more about that period. For instance, what was a typical day in the shop like in terms of the complaints you used to get and how you would handle it?
You want practical action,
yeah.
Daily activities in the shop. This was between 1918 and 1920. You don't want to know anything about 1917 and the Russian Revolution program?
Oh yeah, I want to know about that too.
Well, what do you want to know first?
Well, it'll probably be easier to go in sequence. Tell me first with 1917 when the revolution broke out.
Well, I think I made mention of it, you see. I was working, that was called the Old Factory J in Rochester and Marx. I remember that the work alphabetically was Factory A, B, C, and L, and Q. And this happened to be called the Old Factory J. I was basing it on Holtz. I think I made mention, I wasn't even on the executive board in those days. This was after the 1915 strike when I went back to Rochester Marx. And I was still very green as far as the union was concerned. I was still very religious. But looking back, I think that I was born a rebel. I rebelled against injustice as a child in school. I was basing armholes. As I said, I had the 1910 strike behind me, the 1915 strike behind me. And I had my personal heartaches, my love affair, that nobody knew about. I was very close mouthed. I wasn't the type that would go around blathering. So I went through an awful lot, a transitional period from my religion to such a strong believer in the fundamentals of a home environment and getting away from it all. I disregarded all the fun that they poked at me. Before I opened my lunch, I went to wash my hand and made all the prayers, and after I ate, I prayed. I paid no attention to them when they poked fun at me, didn't they? All I used to say, dear God, don't punish them in my behalf. But there was a girl, as I told you, her face was just a face of an ox. A blonde Jewish girl. She couldn't speak English at all to speak of. And the arm wasting is not the easiest operation. In the fall, they got after her. And here I'm sitting, and I'm working piecework. And I had the responsibility of a home. The rest of them were already out of the house. I think it was only my youngest sister and I that were left in the house. The rest of them were married. And I saw how she tortured that girl, and I just couldn't stand it. I jumped up and I got all over the floor, lady. And I could still shake. And why did I do it? Because while she was bothering her, she was nagging her. The poor girl stuck the needle in her hand and it was bleeding. And I got all, I said, Mary! Before I remember the name. Italian extraction. God damn you, I says. Why do you do this, girl? If she's no good, tell her to get out or do something, but don't torture her like that. I mean, she quietened down. You see, she could have had me suspended or discharged, but she was so scared because I was a tyrant. When I got mad, I didn't stop to consider what would happen to me. I didn't care. There was no concern. I wasn't concerned about myself. And she stopped bothering her. Well, this is just one case that I'm mentioning. Now comes the revolution. Extra papers. Of course, by then I did attend meetings. We had our needles, threaded our needles, and the boxes had red covering. Nothing that we could do. So I tore off the red paper and there were a couple of girls there. I could name some of them are still, one of them that I know is still alive here. I don't want to mention her name unless it would be necessary. And I made such a noise in the shop that the whole shop was unveiled. And there was the manager of the shop was Weinberg. I remember the names. I don't remember your name. I remember it now, all right. Just kidding you about it. But I remember the name distinctly, Weinberg. Big husky guy. He says, well, what is this? What's going on? You're fired. Get out of here. I said, I'll get out and everybody else will go. And I know somehow I had that spirit that didn't work. They didn't fire me. And that was we were singing the revolutionary. If I collect myself, I remember the song. Well, just now we were singing the revolutionary thing.
In English was this, or in?
Yes, it was in English. It wasn't international, that we sang all the time. That was my, when I used to go out to organize, I used to whistle. That was in the old factory, Jane. Then the shop moved. And in 1918, went to, it was still there, I guess. It's such a long time. In 1918, I was already in this factory, in Factory B. This was some golf business. And that was before. But from Factory B, I went to Factory J. See, because I had to leave town. It's kind of getting mixed up with it.
We'll be able to sort it out.
Well, anyway, in 1919, I think it was 1919 that I became chairman in the new Factory J. Because I know that it was 1919 and 1920 when we had the. When was Tam Mooney? Was it 1919 when we had
the general strike for Mooney?
Yes.
That was supposed to be in 1920.
Around 1920. First we were given orders to walk out, and then they told us that we have an agreement, and I didn't listen. I pulled them out.
Now, were you chair lady already then?
I was chair lady, I was chair lady. Already.
So probably the end of 1919 you were chair lady.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, what were my activities? To me, I realized that we had an agreement. We had to follow the rules. We weren't so strong because the city wasn't totally organized. It was hard climbing. I got to show you that. I've got all that. In fact, it was published. And I'll get it together. And they got a hold of a worker, suspension, not fired, you just suspended for bad work. I looked at the garment, and I didn't see anything wrong with it. I was arguing with the manager there, the overseer, whatever he was. She's got to go to the trade board, to the main office. I said, no, she's not going. And I took the complaint, the suspension, I put it in my apron pocket. I said, no, it's not called for. This work, I'll hold it for an investigation. That was the rule. The business agent would come in, the labor manager would come in, investigate and see what was going to happen. I won the battle, I won my battle. But they had it in for me, the management had it in for me, because to me, I figured a worker can't be wrong, which was wrong. According to Hoyle, I was all red. I was all red. But I still believe in my own way of thinking that I was right. There's something wrong with the worker if he doesn't do the work right. Either he's disturbed. And I tried to reason with some of the overseers, some of the examiners, assistant foremen, straw bosses, what they call. Some of them would reason, others wouldn't take it. Get out, get out, get out, you know. But this was my, but here I was working piecework. I had to earn my living just as well as they did. I wasn't getting paid for anything.
Did your pay drop then during that time that you were charity?
Of course. I couldn't help.
How much time every day do you think you would take up with that kind of thing?
Oh, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out. I used to lose on the average. In comparison, I would lose 10% at least. At least. Because I was a hard worker, a fast worker, you see, and I was a good worker, an efficient worker. Then, later on, they had a labor manager in the shop. This was in Hartshaft No. Marks. So I had to take it up with the labor manager. Most of them were professors from one especially. He was a sociologist. I met him later on in life. One of them was, they tried to make me, fine chance they had. They tried to teach me because they knew that I was illiterate. Didn't take a genius to find that out. So one of them asked me to come to his apartment. He'll give me lessons in economics and sociology. I never wanted to mix. Anyways, one, I remember the woman. It comes to my mind. It's so many years ago, 1918, 19. She was an ice baster by machine, I think it was already. So that it changed from hand to machine. And the work was rough. I says, why aren't you more careful? I saved her once, twice, the third time, not even I could take it anymore. I don't know what. I says, what's wrong with you? Somebody sick home? I question her. Where I got the idea of applying psychology. I don't know. It came to me naturally, it seemed. She says, her little boy almost died during the night. She was upset. She didn't sleep. So I went to the labor manager. I said, look, this is the case. Now, I'll tell you. You give me a week's time. And if she doesn't improve, I'll let you do what you want. The meantime, I saved her job. Now this was as far as my activities was in the shop. Besides that, I had to collect dues. I had to arrange for meetings, shop meetings.
So this is of everybody in the shop?
Yes. And take the dues down to the union office, attend local meetings, and go on picket lines besides. This was my activities in the shop as far as sharing. Now, I become a business agent against all odds. I'm jumping from one to another. I want to make one point here clear. How unethical I was from the point of view of what the rules and regulations were as far as the union was concerned, let alone the company. But I was unruly. I didn't... Agreements mere. So this was unheard of. And you won't find that recorded anywhere, I assure you. Well, I'm sorry that I never took the name. I didn't bother. This was in 1922. I was business agent. It was during the convention. No, this was before the convention. And it happened to be in the same factory that I left to become business agent, in the new factory J. The off-presses were little aprons, were depressed, and the timekeeper would punch their cards for every coup that they made. A little shriveled up Polish guy comes in with a suspension in his hand in the evening to my office. What's the matter? I don't remember his name. I mean, if I were a woman, I'd have to make record of it. I would have. What did you do? He said, slipped. I said, what slipped? So I call up the company. What happened is, when the timekeeper went to punch the card, he lifted his apron and exposed himself before the timekeeper. What sense? Certainly, the agreement doesn't call for anything like that. So you got a wife? He's got a wife, he's got five children, and the sixth one is on the way. So I go to the manager, to my manager, in the union, Sam Levine. He says, sir, lay off. Let him go. I don't want to say what he said. I said, Sam, I said, what do you mean, let him go? I said, it's ruining a family. Just take your hands off. There was two business agents with me, two-man business agents. You're crazy, sir. What do you want to do? You want to handle that case? Yes, well, I'm going to handle it. He's going to go back to work. And, you know, looking back, I think I would do it over again. And I don't think I could have done any better. With the knowledge that I have today, I don't think I could have done anymore. I showed you the book of Professor Howard. He was cold as ice. He's a Christian Scientist. I went up to him. You know, he wouldn't smile, because for me to relate something like that, before I did that, I went in to make an investigation to verify the statement, and I knew that timekeeper, a beautiful girl, she was such a good-looking girl. She started, Miss Tomsky, I remember names like that. She started to cry. I said, don't cry. I said, and it so happened that she was Polish extraction too. The poor guy lost his head. So from there, when I verified that it was so, and he didn't deny it either, he slipped. It slipped. So I went to Professor Howard. He said, what do you want me to do? You want me to send him back to work? First I went to Professor Muhlenbach, the impartial chairman. But I told him, before I started anything, I said, look, I have no leg to stand on as far as the agreement is concerned. But I want you to know, I'm appealing to you from a human point of view. I said, this man has five children, this man on the way. So, are you sure? Are you willing to go to investigate? I said, I'll go anywhere, because this is critical. I said, I can't see myself. You see, here is where my religion came into play. If you save one soul, you save the world. See, religion didn't hurt me in this sense. But I figured if I can save this family, I mean, that's when I look back, where I got it from, where it came from. One kept on sending me to the other. I finally went to Mr. Strauss, who was the head of all, Milton Strauss. That was about 2 weeks gone. I didn't give up.
In the meantime, he was suspended.
Oh, yes. Well, my goodness, it was look. Everybody thought I was crazy. But I want to tell you, when I came to Mrs. Strauss, says, what do you want me to do? Send them back to the same shop? I said, Mrs. Strauss, now, I may be foolish. I'm only appealing to you from a human point of view. So keep them out another week and send them to another factory, because as I pointed out, there was ABC and this. And I went back to work in the shop. I didn't want to be business agent. But it tortured me. I was tortured. Now I've got that written. This is what I'm going to show you. It was a rainy day. I was standing on, are you pretty well familiar with Chicago? 22nd Sherman Road is a factory, whatever it was there. Standing out there, I was talking to, it so happened that he was a philosophical anarchist. He said, sir, I've seen people, but you're crazy. Who do you give your life for? I don't want to mention him. Maybe you know, maybe you've heard of him. I don't know. Anyways, while I was standing and talking with him, it was lunchtime. A little shriveled man comes over, gets a hold of my hand and kisses my hand. He says, Sister Sarah, you saved my life. Now, will you find that anywhere? I just, what I wanted to bring out is not this particular case. There was something bigger than this that I wanted to bring out. There was a girl. Her name was Fanny Popkin. And she was a philosophical anarchist. And I used to watch her after I got home from work. This was around 1916. I'd see her walk with a pile of books under her arm. And to look at her, you know where Yetzirah is? You, do you?
Isn't it your heart up?
No, Yetzirah. You have to have an iron desire for a woman. There's no attraction, no feminine attraction. You see, I'm jumping from one thing into another. Because it's hard for me to follow through from year to year, from month to month, from day to day. But at these little outstanding features that you will probably find in the scribbling. I says, Fanny, what are you doing? She said, what's the difference? What's the difference? What's the difference? She was an avid reader, and I was interested in what she was doing. This, by the way, was in the shop where this Walter was, this is before the war. I'm forgetting
what this is. You cover the area here.
And there were a couple of scabs that I knew they were scabbing in 1910, armor braces. And they nagged her. They poked fun at her, this girl. I couldn't take it. You see, I came back from 1915 strike. I said, why bother this girl? She doesn't bother anybody. She minds her own business. She was as slow as the molasses in June, you know. And it was hard for me to swallow that because I was fresh. But that's not my affair. It's too bad. So she makes less than I do. We were working piecework. But on top of it, they put fun at her. And I couldn't take it. So I went over to those bohemian Americans, American bohemians. I said, you go so lay upward, you're going to feel sorry. Don't forget, I know who you are. I remember you from 1910, and I let him have it. And they never bothered her after that. Later on, I became her cheerleader, her business agent. And she advised me, she said, Sarah, why don't you give up politics? Why don't you read philosophy instead? You see, I mean, the transition, the period, the life that I went through. Then another feature that I had during the 1922 convention, the convention was in Chicago, I was business agent, and Hill was delivering the speech, and a fellow was suspended. The convention was very important. It was important, but to me, to put a worker back to work was more important. Now, that I was right or wrong, in my heart, I feel I was right. I'm not sorry for these things. That's, for the time being, as much as I want to say, unless you ask me questions.
Yeah, okay. Now, going back to when you were the chair lady first. Okay, someone... Would the worker come to you with the complaint?
Yeah.
Or the... And now what if the examiner found something? He would come to you with a complaint.
The examiner? No.
No. What would...
The examiner would return the work if it was bad to the worker, you see. Now, if the worker was dissatisfied, then the worker would come to me. But, since the union was still weak, they were afraid to make themselves conspicuous, because then they would step on them. Now, I was stepped upon because of my activities, plenty, you know. Because another thing that is outstanding, when I was chair lady, I resented gifts. I didn't want to be showered with gifts.
Now, who would try and give you the gifts? The workers or the bosses?
The workers. The bosses, too, but I didn't know. Now, Hutchinson Mark, the bosses didn't give no gifts. But they had a habit. When you give it's enough that you give recognition for the work that you do. All right. But they were, honest to goodness, I can still see that pale-looking face of an armhole mister. Again, I come back with it. It was my work. It was a woman, a widow, and I think it was about 1919, and they made a collection for me. I think they bought me a watch, like, I couldn't do anything about it, although I told them that, I made it known that I didn't want no gift. I found out that this woman, because I wasn't discriminating, I didn't care who it was, I took complaints when the work was right or wrong. I did what I could to help alleviate her. Hardship. I found out that this poor woman gave $5. I wanted to die. In those days, you didn't make very much more than $5. Although, all right, that time was prosperity already. And I was already working on this special machine. I was in an armor. It gave me a break, so as long as I was spending so much time she didn't want to take the money back. So I selected the committee and made them buy a turkey or two, I don't remember, but I made it my business that she gets the money back. And things like that.
Now, this wasn't an attempt to bribe you, it was just to show their appreciation, wasn't it?
Yeah. No. As far as when I was business agent, and I had a, I think I told you when I, that the people that elected me, I was elected by men, not by women. When they came, they wanted to be rewarded for electing me. Mm. And you got that.
Yeah, I'm going to go later in more detail about the bit when you were business agent.
Yeah.
Now, okay, if someone brought a complaint to you, Sarah, then what was your next step? What would you then do with it?
The next step was to take it up with the foreman or the manager, or if it was necessary, to keep it for investigation for the business agent.
And the business agent would come in periodically, or you would go to the...
I called the business agent. See, I had three rings. And the telephone ring, that was for me. I mean, it was so arranged that we had that privilege. So cool. It's hard to go back all these things in memory.
Mm-hmm.
It's lodged there, back there. You have to excavate it.
So that you would call the business agent then, and then it was his job to reach an agreement, and if he couldn't, it would then go to the arbitration board.
If they couldn't, the business agent would take it up with the management in the factory, and they couldn't agree, it would go to the trade board.
Now,
in part of chairman.
Were there meetings periodically of all the chair people from all the different shops? Did you meet jointly and talk about
this? In the early days, there were monthly shop chairman meetings just for the shop chairman.
From all the different shops.
Yeah.
And what were these meetings about?
Well, to expedite whatever had to be done in the shop, reports made what is taking place in the industry, how we should conduct ourselves, and sometimes, especially before we were all organized. There was a lot of work to be done, 4 o'clock in the morning to picket line. There were times, after working in the shop, to be on the picket line 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Frank would be on the picket line. That's all that was necessary. We were there, distribute leaflets.
Now, was it your responsibility as chair lady to try and find other people from your shop to go to the picket line?
Oh, yes. I was driven. I'd never ask them to do anything that I wouldn't do myself. I had a lot of experience here in the last 20 years. I almost as much experience as I did in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. Now, as a chair lady, did you have any direct connection to the joint board, or your connection was to the business agent just?
Well, the joint board, you're a delegate to the joint board from your local unions. It's a different thing in time.
And that was later that you were the
No. The joint board, you see. And I think I told you this before. The delegates are elected by their respective locals. Shop chairman is in contact with their business agent. That's there, and if they're not satisfied with the business agent, sometimes I didn't agree with the business, I'd go to the manager, the head of the union.
To the union manager?
Yeah.
Or you go to the manager, not the joint board, though, when you had a problem like that?
No. Of course, if let's say that a worker has a grievance, now there is a grievance board. Now, you're not satisfied with the decision of the grievance board. You appeal to the joint board. You're not satisfied with the decision of the joint board. You go as far as the convention. See, I mean, there are steps.
Now, how would you get to the grievance board first? That would be through the chair lady?
Through the local. Through the local.
I see.
It's through the local. Now, I didn't avail myself. I did my own judgment. If a worker went against the union. You see, I did a lot of things that was unethical. I recall, for instance, now this has nothing to do with Chicago, this was already here. A rush coat, a rush garment was given to a girl in a shop where I worked class. And the girl put the coat aside, she didn't take it right away. And one of the fellers went and squealed to the foreman that she didn't make the rush coat. I didn't take him to the grievance. I said, you go to the union right away. Go see your business and you're not going to work. You see, I had that much power.
Oh, so the chair lady, as a chair lady, you had the power to say to someone,
I didn't have the power, I took the
power. Took it.
See, that was the difference. No, that's why I say I was unethical. I didn't always follow the rules. See, now, it was, I wasn't what you call, it is not ethical. It isn't the right word for it. I just didn't follow the rules. If I thought it was wrong, it was wrong. I couldn't, and especially it was because this girl was a color girl, and he said that nigger that got under my skin. You go, and I didn't let him work. Now the foreman could have stopped me legally, but he didn't dare. You see, he didn't dare. He didn't have the guts, because I had ways of taking care of it, and they knew it. See,
Now, Sarah, in Chicago when you were chair lady, would there be times when you would give something to the business agent and he wouldn't handle it? What would happen then? Say there was a complaint.
Yeah.
And you tried to straighten it out in the shop.
That again, I didn't follow the rules. See, if I saw the business agent neglected something, and we weren't supposed to make any stoppages, I made sure that I had somebody in there that I can trust. And the business agent would come in and say, you're not supposed to make any stop. And I'd come in the second up, why don't you go back to work? And they'd and they'd stand there like, you see now, there are all kinds of, well, where in the world I got it? You answer. I don't know.
But the business agent would know clearly why you were doing it.
You know, he didn't know. I'd never let him know.
I mean, but he knew what you were objecting to, what everyone was objecting to, didn't he?
Well, sure. He knew, but he didn't know where it came from. See, the company couldn't put their finger on it. That's the point. Because there was a time when they had to work together. The company had to work. Don't you see, the thing is, who benefited? Before we had a union, Harchester said, there will be no union until this sign is out here. Never, we won't have a union. All right, after the union, they realized that without a union they couldn't exist, because there was such a management cooperation. Without it they couldn't exist. See, because they had, when it was slack, when it was busy, they were sure that the workers wouldn't walk out. They were under control, they were disciplined, see. So was I. I was disciplined to a certain extent, but then I thought it was too